We're delighted to be together this morning to honor our Father in heaven and His Son, who is fairer than all. We're thankful that you can be here to enjoy this time to worship our God and encourage one another in our faith. Do you care about what people think of you? Should you? I think most of us, in one way or another, are concerned about what others think of us. Unfortunately, we tend to be concerned in areas that we shouldn't be about that, and probably not concerned in areas where we should be about what others think of us. My mother-in-law tells about when she was growing up in Athens, Alabama, as a teenager, and air conditioning was first coming out in cars, and teenagers would actually ride around the square in their cars, or probably their parents' cars, with the windows rolled up so that everybody would think that they had air conditioning in their car when they didn't have air conditioning in their car. Now, I'm going to tell you what, that is really dedication to a concern about what people think of you. I've heard people announce proudly, "Well, I don't care what people think." When they say that, I'm usually a little bit concerned, because what's normally going to follow is some sort of statement that is mean or insulting, or something that they know is going to offend the sensibilities of decent people. But I just don't care what people think. Maybe that's an area where you should care what people think. And when they say that, I want to ask, if you really don't care about what people think, then why are you telling me that? Do you care what I think? Of course, I want to ask this, but I don't say that out loud. After all, what would people think? See how this works on us? It works on us in a whole lot of different ways. And a lot of times, it's not for our good. And it's not for the good of others spiritually. Human beings are social creatures. Our brains are wired from infancy to relate to others. Every institution in society rewards those who win approval from others, at least on some level. The behaviors that you engage in to win approval are different depending on what institution or organization or relationship you may be in. So to win approval as a United States Marine, for instance, would be much different. You'd do things differently than you would if you were in a college sorority or in a multinational corporation or a gathering of your relatives. But the principle remains the same. People seek approval from others. Everyone likes to be liked. So this morning I want us to think about how this works on us and areas where we need to be seeking approval, and some areas where we don't need to be seeking the approval of others. And as I said a moment ago, a lot of times we get those areas exactly the opposite of what they ought to be. This is more than just an academic question, and it's more than just a social psychology sort of inquiry. It's something I think that's important for us to consider so that we might ultimately win the approval of God, who's most important after all. We should care what other people think about us. When it comes to our example and our influence over them, in 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 21, Paul talked about providing honorable things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but in the sight of men. It was important to Paul, and what he's talking about there is taking a collection that was given, a collection of money by various churches to poor saints in Jerusalem, and it was to be sort of overseen, managed, if you will, or seen after by certain individuals who were chosen. He wanted to make sure that everything was above board, that everything not only was honorable, but that it was seen to be honorable in the collection and carrying and the distribution of this particular collection or amount of money that was given. But he's talking about providing things that are honorable, not only in the sight of God, He knew he was going to do what's right in the sight of God, but he was concerned about making sure that everybody else knew that what was done with that money was going to be right. It was going to be taken care of. It was not going to be pilfered. It was not going to be dipped into. It was going to be used for what it was given to be used for. Paul was concerned about what others thought about that, about maintaining integrity and reputation. In 1 Peter chapter 2 and verses 11 and 12, Peter says, "Beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims to abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, when they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works which they observe, glorify God in the day of visitation." Glorify God. People will be able to see what you do, that you're not doing evil things, that you're abstaining from fleshly lusts, and that you're doing good works. And as a consequence of that, the glory will go to God. And we'll talk about that some more in just a second. Our example and our influence is important, especially when it comes to our example and influence in the spiritual realm and with brothers and sisters in Christ. Look over with me in 1 Corinthians chapter 8. Paul in this text is talking about eating meat sacrificed to idols. There's a problem in Corinth. Many of them had been idolaters. A lot of the meat that was sold in the marketplace had been sacrificed to idols. What should a Christian do? Paul is dealing with that in this context. He says in verse 4, "Concerning the eating of things offered to idols, we know that an idol is nothing in the world and that there is no other God but one." Idols aren't really real, so to speak. There's no real God behind an idol. Everybody knows that, Paul says. Well, maybe everybody doesn't really fully know that or understand it. For if you skip on down to verse 7, he says, "However, there is not in everyone that knowledge. For some with consciousness of the idol until now eat it as a thing offered to an idol, and their conscience being weak is defiled. But food does not commend us to God, for neither if we eat are we the better, nor if we do not eat are we the worse. But beware lest somehow this liberty of yours become a stumbling block to those who are weak." What Paul is saying is that meat is meat, food is food, an idol is nothing. It ought not to matter, you know, where the food came from. You ought to be able to eat it. But some people don't realize that. Some people think there is something to these idols. Some people think that the meat that's offered to them does constitute, if you eat it, a relationship with that idol. Paul says, you need to beware. Maybe you know that that's not true. But you need to be cautious. You need to be concerned about what somebody else thinks about what you're doing. And so he says, "If anyone sees you who have knowledge eating in an idol's temple, will not the conscience of him who is weak be emboldened to eat those things offered to idols? And because of your knowledge, shall the weak brother perish for whom Christ died? But when you thus sin against the brethren and wound their weak conscience, you sin against Christ. Therefore, if food makes my brother stumble, I will never again eat meat lest I make my brother stumble." Now here is a place where we need to be really cautious about our words and our actions. It's an area where what somebody else thinks about what I do is very, very important. If they think that as a Christian, especially as a brother or sister in Christ, I am doing something that is wrong, and yet they see it as something, well, if he does that, maybe I can do that too. Even though, you know, he must know that's wrong. But maybe it's not that bad a thing to do. Maybe it's okay after all. And so they become influenced by my example to engage in that behavior when they believe it to be wrong. What have I done? Well, the Apostle Paul says, I've caused a weak brother to perish. And the implication is, I've done that because I was not concerned enough about what somebody else thought concerning my actions. I must be very careful that my example before my brethren not only is one that corresponds with my conscience, but I must also be concerned that it doesn't lead somebody else to violate their conscience. So my thought is, not only is this okay for me to do as me, is this what I believe God would allow me to do, but also, do I have brothers and sisters in Christ that understand that? Or will I cause them to violate their conscience by doing this action? That's a very serious matter. And it's one that, as I said, all of us should give thought to. The main thing is that in whatever we do, we're going to be glorifying God, and that people will see our example as something that's worthy of being a Christian, that's worthy of wearing the name of Christ, and that as a consequence of that, they're going to glorify our Father in heaven. It's basically what Peter said in 1 Peter 2 that we read a minute ago. And of course, Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 16, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. It does matter what people think. We're not doing things to be seen of men. We're doing things to serve God as His servants and as His children. And it should concern us that people are aware that we're doing those things because we are God's servants and God's children. And so when they see us engaging in good works, they're going to glorify Him. They're going to give Him the praise and glory. Well, here is a child of God who is serving in this way, who's doing good works, beneficial to me and to society and to whoever. And the glory goes to God for that when they realize your connection with Him. The wise man says in Proverbs 22 and verse 1 that a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, and loving favor rather than silver and gold. So choose that good name. Your good name is your reputation. It is, after all, what others think of you. Work on that good reputation by doing that which is good, by being concerned with setting a good example, both morally and with the works that you do, the charity that you show, your generosity, your kindness, your compassion. All of those things build a good reputation or a good name, and it's worth something. It's worth much more than silver and gold. But then there are some things that we should not care about what others think of us when it comes to things like our sense of self-worth and our personal pride. I'm afraid that there are a lot of people, and maybe not just a few Christians, who attempt to build a positive sense of self-worth, their self-image, based on what others think of them. Have you ever been tempted to do that? Is that your approach to feeling good about yourself? Is it based on what other people think of you? I believe that that approach to your sense of self-worth is extremely detrimental, both to you and to the cause of Christ. In fact, I cannot think of anything that is more psychologically, mentally, and spiritually debilitating than building your sense of worth, of self-worth, on what other people think of you. It is, as we'll see in a moment, the root of hypocrisy. There's a fine line, yet a big chasm, between what we were talking about a minute ago, doing works that are good works and letting our light shine, that men may glorify our Father in heaven. There's a fine line, but a big chasm between that and doing things to be seen of men and gaining our own sense of worthwhileness from those things. That's hypocrisy. It's often referred to as being in people bondage. There's a phrase that's caught on last couple of years called people pleasing. And there's a real sense in which we need to be concerned about pleasing others. The Bible talks about that. But if we're pleasing others in order to gain a positive self-image, we're off base. It's basically a condition where we live in a constant state of uneasiness due to our thoughts about how others perceive us. So a person worries about how they look or how they sound, how they walk, what they say, and so on and so on. And everything they do is for the sake of making sure that everyone likes and approves of them. And so you base your entire sense of self-worth on that. Bottom line, it's a colossal waste of time. You need to understand that much of your concern about what others think of you is pointless. And they're going to think of you in reality the way you think about yourself most of the time. Our ability to recognize this kind of false self-image often improves with age and as we mature. So at 20, young people are often very concerned about what people think of them. At 40, maybe they don't care as much. At 60, they realize that people aren't thinking about them at all. I like the saying somebody came up with that we'd care less about what people think of us if we knew how little they did. Jesus warned us against developing our self-image based on what others think of what we do. And as I said, it's really called hypocrisy. Listen to what he says in Matthew 6 and verse 1. Take heed that you do not do your charitable deeds before men to be seen by them. Otherwise, you have no reward from your Father in heaven. If your goal is to please others, to make others think well of you by what you're doing, you have no reward from your Father in heaven. It's not the way to go about it. In Matthew 23, verses 27 and 28, he says to the Pharisees, "Woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like whitewashed tombs, which indeed appear beautiful inwardly, but inside are full of dead men's bones and uncleanness. Even so, you also outwardly appear righteous to men, but inside you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness." So here are people who dedicated themselves to looking good on the outside when it came to religious and moral issues, and they did, but it didn't do them any good on the inside. They were still full of hypocrisy and lawlessness, and he compares them to a tomb that may be very beautiful on the outside, but inside there's that dead and rotting corpse. All we care about is that outside, what people see on the outside, and their perception of that. We'll still be ugly on the inside. Again, in Luke 16 and verse 15, Jesus said to the Pharisees, "You are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts. What is highly esteemed among men is an abomination in the sight of God." And as I said, these efforts are counterproductive anyway. People will normally see through it, and they will not think about us what we want them to think. Often, the things that we do, if we'll just think about it a minute, the things that we do to get others to think of us in a certain way or to perceive us in a certain way don't really have the desired effect. We may give to some cause or to somebody so that people will think us to be charitable. And a lot of people will think, well, we're a soft touch. I'll give you an example of that. If, somebody calls you on the telephone and they're seeking money for some charity, and you wind up saying, yeah, I'll give $10 or $100, whatever it is, to this charity. Somehow, you get put on somebody's list, don't you? And then, every other hour for the next 10 years, you're going to get a call from some charity because one time you gave to somebody on some telephone guy that was soliciting for a charity. One time you did that, and so now you're a soft touch, and every charity in the world is going to be calling your number. We may let somebody have their way about a certain matter in order to make them think that we're cooperative. And what they're really thinking is maybe that we're weak. We may let someone not have their way to show them that we're independent, that we think for ourselves, that we're tough. And what they're really thinking is that we're stubborn and foolish. We may color our hair to make others think that we're young, when what they really think is that we're insecure about our age. We may get a crazy haircut so that others will think that we're nonconformists, that we don't run with the crowd, when what they really think is that we're easily influenced by the latest fad. We could go on and on and on, couldn't we? All of the things that we do to get people to think a certain thing about us, most of the time, they won't think that thing anyway. In fact, much of the time, they'll think just the opposite. But Satan twists us all up, gets us so focused on these kinds of concerns, which shouldn't be concerns to us at all, living our lives to get others to think of us in certain kinds of ways. And even if we could do it, even if they thought of us in those ways, what glory would that bring to God? How much better off would we be? And the reality is most of the time we can't do it. We can't get others to think of us in those ways. You see how counterproductive that is? I said it's a colossal waste of time. And that's exactly what it is. Colossal waste of time. There are other things that we need to consider just for a moment. We don't need to worry what others think of us. Those who are falsely accusing us or mistreating us. In 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 14, Peter says, if you are reproached for the name of Christ, blessed are you, for the Spirit of glory and of God rests upon you. So people say bad things about us. Because we have a relationship with Christ, we're reproached for the name of Christ. We think, oh, that's a horrible thing. No, it's not. It's a good thing. Listen to what he says. On their part, he's blasphemed. That's bad. But on your part, he's glorified. We're entering an era in our society where I believe more and more and more people are going to be saying a lot of bad things about Christians. And what I'm hearing is, a lot of people, oh, we're just wringing our hands and, oh, this is so terrible. And what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Well, hopefully what we're going to do is just keep on doing right. Living for Jesus. And not change one thing. To try to get evil people to say good things about us. I don't intend to. Change one thing to get evil people to say good things about us. We just need to keep on serving the Lord. Peter says, let none of you suffer as a murderer, a thief, an evildoer, a busybody in other people's matters. But if anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed. You don't have to try to change people's opinion of you if you're suffering as a Christian, if they're on you because you're a Christian, if they're on you because you're standing for what's right, you're standing against abortion, if you're standing against homosexual marriages, if you're standing against alcohol, whatever it might be, you're standing against those things. You're standing up for what's right and people say bad things about you. I'm not going to care what they say. We should not care what they say. The Hebrew writer tells those to whom he writes in Hebrews 10 and verse 32, recall the former days in which after you were illuminated, you endured a great struggle with sufferings, partly while you were made a spectacle by both by reproaches and tribulations, and partly while you became companions of those who were so treated. The Hebrew Christians could remember a time when they were made a spectacle. That is, everybody's looking at them, everybody's speaking of them reproachfully, talking bad about them, you might say. And the Hebrew writer says, you know what, that was a great time for you. You were being what you were supposed to be, and he's really telling them you need to go back and be those kind of people again. Lastly, we shouldn't care what other people think about us when we're teaching the truth. Because we don't teach the truth to please men. We teach the truth to please God. We try to persuade men, in a sense. Paul asks, do I now persuade men or God? Do I seek to please men? If I still please men, I would not be a bondservant of Christ. Again, the truth is the truth. We can speak it kindly, we can speak it in love, we can be tactful, but the truth is the truth. And I'm not going to try to change it or alter it or adulterate it in any way so that people will think better of me. Because if I did, it wouldn't be the truth. And I wouldn't be pleasing to God. Ultimately, the Lord's approval is all that really matters. And if most people paid half as much attention to whether or not the Lord approves of what they're doing and saying and thinking, the way they look and the way they dress and the way they act, if we paid half as much attention to what the Lord thinks about those things as we do what people think about those things, we'd be a whole lot better than we are. I like the way Paul puts it in 2 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 18. The end of that verse in the contemporary English version, it says, the only approval that counts is the Lord's approval. It's quite a statement, isn't it? That's the only approval that counts. So this morning, what about you? Does God approve of your life? Your actions, your attitude, your behavior, your relationship with Him? That's really all that counts. And if you're not approved of Him, you can be. Give your life to Him. Seek His face. Turn yourself over to Him. Acknowledge the name of His Son. Be baptized in water for the remission of sin. Live for Jesus. We'd ask you to come while we stand in the sun.